On the train from New York to Philadelphia, Charles read Time and Victor read the Post. Charles was 33 but could have passed for 25. Victor was 35, but his male pattern baldness made him look older. They were both dressed neatly in business suits with white button-down shirts and rep-striped neckties. Both carried attaché cases. When the steward came around the first time, when they came out of the tunnel into the New Jersey wetlands, Charles ordered a 7-Up, but the steward said all they had was Sprite, and Charles smiled and said that would be fine. Victor ordered coffee, black, and when the steward delivered the Sprite and the coffee, he handed him a $5 bill and told him to keep the change. Just outside of Trenton, they had another Sprite and another cup of black coffee. And again, Charles gave the steward a $5 bill and told him to keep the change. Both Charles and Victor felt a little sorry for someone who had to try to raise a family, or whatever, on what they paid a steward. When the conductor announced, "North Philadelphia, North Philadelphia next," Charles opened his attaché case and put Time inside, and then stood up. He took his Burberry trench coat from the rack and put it on. Then he handed Victor his top coat and helped him into it. Finally, he took their luggage, substantially identical soft carry-on clothing bags, from the rack, and laid it across the back of the seat in front of them, which was not occupied. Then the both of them sat down again as the train moved through Northeast Philadelphia, and then slowed as it approached the North Philadelphia station. Victor looked at his watch, a gold Patek Philippe with a lizard band. 3:05, he said. Right on time.
I heard that Amtrak finally got their act together, Charles replied.
When the train stopped, Charles and Victor walked to the rear of the car, smiled at the steward, and got off. They walked down a filthy staircase to ground level, and then through an even filthier tunnel, and came out in a parking lot just off North Broad Street.
There it is, Victor said, nodding toward a year-old 1972 Pontiac sedan.
When he had called from New York City, he had been told what kind of car would be waiting for them, and where it would be parked, and where they could find the keys, on top of the left rear tire. As they walked to the car, both Victor and Charles took pigskin gloves from their pockets and put them on. There was no one else in the parking lot, which was nice. Victor squatted and found the keys where he had been told they would be, and unlocked the driver's door. He reached inside and opened the driver's side rear door and laid his carry-on bag on the seat and closed the door. Then he got behind the wheel, closed the driver's door, and reached over and unlocked the door for Charles. Charles handed the top of his carry-on bag to Victor, who put it on his lap. And then Charles got in, slid under the lower portion of his carry-on bag, and closed his door. Charles and Victor looked around the parking lot. There was no one in sight. Charles felt under the seat and grunted. Carefully, so that no one could see what he was doing, he took what he had found under the seat, a shotgun, and laid it on top of the carry-on bag. He saw that it was a Remington Model 1100 semi-automatic 12-gauge with a ventilated rib. It looked practically new. Charles pulled the action lever back, checked carefully to make sure it was unloaded, and then let the action slam forward again. He then felt beneath the seat again and this time came up with a small plastic bag. It held 5 Winchester Upland shotgun shells.
7.5s, he said, annoyance and perhaps contempt in his voice.
Maybe he couldn't find anything else, Victor said. Or maybe he thinks that a shotgun shell is a shotgun shell.
More likely he wants to make sure I get close, Charles said. He doesn't want anything to go wrong with this. I had a phone call just before I left for the airport.
Saying what?
He wanted to be sure I understood that he didn't want anything to go wrong with this. That's why he called me himself.
What did this guy do, anyway?
You heard what I heard. He went in business for himself, Charles said. Bringing stuff up from Florida and selling it to the niggers.
You don't believe that, do you?
I believe that he probably got involved with the niggers, but I don't think that's the reason we're doing a job on him.
Then what?
I don't want to know.
What do you think?
If Savarese was a younger man, I'd say maybe he caught this guy hiding the salami in the wrong place. It's something personal like that anyhow. If he had just caught him doing something, business he shouldn't have been doing, he probably would have taken care of him himself.
Maybe this guy's related to him or something, Victor said, and he doesn't want it to get out that he had a job done on him.
I don't want to know. He told me he went into business for himself with the niggers. That's what I believe. I wouldn't want Savarese to think I didn't believe him or that I got nosy and started asking questions.
He loaded the shotgun. When it had taken three of the shot shells, it would take no more.
Damn, Charles said.
He worked the action three times to eject the shells and then unscrewed the magazine cap and pulled the fore end off. He took a quarter and carefully pried the magazine spring retainer loose. He then raised the butt of the shotgun and shook the weapon until a plastic rod slipped out. This was the magazine plug required by federal law to be installed in shotguns used for hunting wild fowl. It restricted the magazine capacity to three rounds. Charles then reassembled the shotgun and loaded it again. This time it took all five shells, four in the magazine and one in the chamber. He checked to make sure the safety was on, unzipped his carry-on bag, slid the shotgun inside, closed the zipper, and then put the carry-on bag in the back seat on top of Victor's.